Security is all about visibility. You can't protect yourself from threats that you don't understand or see, and you can't respond appropriately unless you're able to detect. So opaqueness is really bad for security. You want transparency.
You're listening to KBCast, the cybersecurity podcast for all executives. Cutting through the jargon and hype to understand the landscape where risk and technology meet. Now, here's your host, Carissa Breen.
Joining me today is Phil Rodriguez, Head of Security APJ Commercial from Amazon Web Services. And today we're discussing common assumptions or misconceptions that businesses have when partnering with a cloud provider. So Phil, thank you so much for joining. I'm pumped to have you on the show today. I'm a big fan of yours. And I know that we caught up at the AWS summit here in Sydney a few weeks back. So I really enjoyed that summit. It was excellent. And it sort of led me to get into a couple of questions I'm curious about, as well as our audience. But before we do that, I want to start with what security means for AWS and then some of the investment that you guys have put into the space recently. I want to get your thoughts on that. Now, I know that AWS invested $13.2 billion into Australia, which also includes a $730 million to extend AWS cloud capabilities. So talk to me about that. I know I've just thrown a lot of numbers at you.
Hi, Carissa. Thanks. Nice to talk to you again. Yeah, Summit was a lot of fun. We always put a lot of time into that conference. We really think of those big public conferences as educational opportunities. And I really try to focus on making sure we've got great customers up on stage. So at that one, we had the CISO from Westpac, Richard Johnson, talking about how they focus on culture and people to get security outcomes. We had Jackie Barr from the Australian Cybersecurity Center talking about how they built a national threat intelligence sharing platform on AWS. Happy to talk about the investment. Yeah, they're big numbers, right? And absolutely, we've already spent $9.1 billion Australian dollars in Australia on infrastructure, primarily around our regions, which are, you know, our big locations for customers to be accessing the cloud within Australia. That includes $630 million already spent in upgrades in infrastructure around our high-speed fiber connectivity all around those big AWS regions. And as you said, we've pledged to spend another $13.2 billion on additional investments over the next handful of years. Those are infrastructure around our data centers, around our regions, around our availability zones, all that big hardware utilities that our customers can take advantage of. And like you said, that includes $730 million more dollars around fiber network infrastructure. One of the things that keeps all those numbers in scale for me is if you look at what we've already spent on networks and what we're going to spend on networks, just around those two big regions in Sydney and our second big region in Melbourne, it's $1.4 billion Australian dollars just on the network layer alone. The interesting part that I found was that this has a big knock-on effect to the Australian economy. What we call our data center supply chain is going to be employing 11,000 people over the course of these next few years. And when we did a study with the Australian government, it looked like it was going to create $35 billion Australian dollars in GDP. So these are big investments.
Wow, most definitely. And I had to make sure I triple check those numbers to make sure it was a billion with a B and not a million. So I really appreciate you clarifying that. So maybe just to press on a little bit more, Phil. So what can people sort of expect then from these investments? You sort of touched on it, but I'm curious to sort of, if you were to forward think about the vision, what can people sort of expect to see from these larger investments?
So the most tangible part is the way that businesses interact with our cloud services, which is inherently an intangible thing. So these physical infrastructure investments for ours are actually largely unseen by our customers. Our regions, the big compute and networking and storage and database, et cetera, facilities we use to really power the cloud. These regions are made up of multiple of what we call availability zones. Each one of those availability zones is made up of multiple data centers, et cetera, et cetera. So the bulk of these dollar investments are into building out those very large data center-centric clusters of facilities that we wrap together all in logical layers and present to our customers as what we call an AWS region. So that's the direct investment. I would say the thing that people actually get from this is a fast, secure, and highly available cloud experience. And nowadays, especially in 2023, the public cloud is touching everybody's daily lives, whether people are tapping on as they commute, whether people are checking into flights, whether people are at home watching Netflix or HBO Plus, whether people are educating themselves or communicating. You know, these are all cloud services nowadays. So those infrastructure investments that we make, make those cloud experiences better, faster, and more secure for the Australian citizens that depend on them.
Yeah, you touched on a great point, faster. Now, in the recent years, everything's about having it now. It's always about people are impatient. So you guys are sort of really leaning into that mentality because people expect that now, especially from a large cloud provider like AWS. Would you say that that's the case?
Yeah, absolutely. And AWS offers what I'm going to call compute building blocks for developers and businesses to take advantage of to create their own applications for their own customers. Think about the Australian Census was a great, really accessible application in Australia, right? PwC and the ABS partnered together to build that essentially web application that was used by the majority of citizens in Australia. The speed of the web application, you know, it has to be sufficient, but it's really that backend speed between all of the AWS services and all of the application code that was built to access those services. That's the important part. So I guess what I'm saying is a lot of that speed is it's kind of hidden. It's below the surface of the applications that our customers build, but the end result is the speediness of that application is quite good.
So I want to switch gears now. Now, this question I have wanted to ask someone like yourself for so long.
Here we go.
And I'm really keen to discuss this with you and some of the misconceptions that people have around the cloud. Now, you can't obviously see my hands, but they're in inverted commas. I want to give you an example first, just so I set the scene for people, because I obviously speak to a number of different people day in, day out, whether it's cybersecurity professionals, people like yourself on the show, or just people generally. And there's this thing that people think like, I'm running my company in the cloud, AWS, for example. And then some people may believe that that's it for them. Like, then there's nothing more to do. I'm in the cloud. I've got AWS up and running. No further work to do around configurations, control, access, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you and I both know that that's not the case, but like, where does this come from?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked because it's a really important topic. Everything comes back to what we originally called it. AWS was the first provider to use the term, the shared responsibility model. So some of that perception is absolutely true. Yes, we do provide a really secure foundation layer of the cloud. But yes, customers also have responsibilities in making good security decisions in that environment. And yes, we, AWS, and our partners working together help our customers make those great decisions. So let me just talk about each of those three layers like really quickly. That big infrastructure investment we talked about below, that's what we call security of the cloud or what we sometimes call in the business below the line. That's the stuff that customers can't really see. That's how we keep our physical facilities secure. That's how we do our HR personnel checks. That's how we do our video camera monitoring inside of the facilities, et cetera. It's also how we keep those core foundational components, the computers underneath of the surface that are running all of these services secure. And that's our responsibility as a provider. And we're really, really proud of our track record for that. But the cloud is just a big virtualized bundles of APIs. So our customers, when they're engaging in our services, they have decisions to make as well. For example, their choice of a service is a decision in and of itself. Do they want to use computer database? Do they want to use a more advanced security service? They can choose to apply a security configuration to the service. For example, do they want a long password or a short password? Do they want to turn on encryption or not? Cloud has a lot of flexibility into it because we're catering from everybody from the world's largest, most secure organizations down to tomorrow's next startup dream, two people in kind of a garage and a credit card. So there's a lot of choice in that platform. And then that third level is we don't just let our customers make these decisions in a vacuum. We do a few things. For example, we publish guidance like our well-architected framework or our security benchmarks. We give customers access to great high-tech security tools. They can check their security configurations. They can enable encryption. They can run advanced threat detection if they choose. And then our partners offer a lot of great either technology or consulting services as well. So customers need to make clear decisions in order to get the best security outcome in the cloud. If they understand what we, AWS, as the provider does, and if they understand what they, as a customer, is doing, then they're in reasonably good shape. But yeah, we also help to educate customers when they say, well, I'm using AWS, therefore I'm secure. And we help them realize that they still have important decisions to make.
Okay, thanks for that overview. So there's a couple of things in there which I'm really interested to find out more. So you said before, like what we AWS do and then what the customers should be doing. Do you think that's where the disconnect sort of comes into it? It's like, oh, I've got AWS, like it's all good. I can sort of, in Australian terms, kick back and do nothing more. But you guys have obviously come out saying like, well, no, like we will help you to this point and then it's on you to do the other sort of the other areas. So is that where perhaps, I mean, if you had a link where people are getting confused, is that where it's sort of their mentality is stemmed from?
Public cloud is still a relatively new computing paradigm for the world. Sometimes we compare it to the big shifts around personal computing in the 80s or the big shifts through mobile devices through, I guess I call it the 2000s. You know, the cloud, the public cloud, we consider to be the third big technology shift, right? And it's relatively new. AWS has been around for business now for 15, 16 plus years. We've been in Sydney for, I think it's close to 11 now. It's definitely over 10 in Australia. But, you know, in the history of businesses and computing, it's still a relatively short time. What we want to do is make sure that people understand what our responsibility as a service provider and then help educate them on what their responsibility is. It's hard for me to say where the confusion might lay because I think we're pretty clear about it, but I definitely agree that not everybody understands that well. And it may be because we're really offering building blocks and those building blocks are used by people like application developers in order to create their own software. So it's very much not like a SaaS layer that is consumed by end users, although we do have some of those services. It's much more about the fundamental compute building blocks that application developers like at banks or government agencies or software companies need in order to build their own applications.
Do you think as well, Phil, you said before there are decisions to be made and you rattle off a whole range of decisions. Do you think sometimes you guys got this smorgasbord of things that you can sort of choose from? Yeah, overwhelms people though, because there's a lot of things going on, a lot of things to wrap your head around and to understand to like the minutiae. So do you think that maybe there's so much going on that that's can confuse and that overwhelm people? And when people are overwhelmed, things get missed or things aren't being done correctly?
I really like to focus on the fundamentals. It's something I've spent my whole career doing. And when you look at AWS security, there's about 10 things that customers need to get right. And we're really clear about them. For example, our CISO publishes a blog where he talks about the 10 most important security decisions you can make in the cloud. We then support that blog with tooling like AWS Security Hub that will check a customer's full cloud environment to make sure that they're meeting these security best practices. We publish guidance that the industry picks up, like the CIS, the Center for Internet Security, publishes third-party, you know, vendor-neutral benchmarks, and they have a AWS security benchmark where these best practices are enshrined. And then again, our partners pick this up as well, and they build tooling that helps customers detect or alert if they're having a security problem. But it all comes back to those basic, most fundamental things. For example, just one example out of those 10, multi-factor authentication. You know, we recommend that customers use multi-factor authentication, especially on their root accounts inside of the AWS environment. So multi-factor authentication and a small handful of other controls are the most important things to get right in the cloud.
Yeah, okay, that makes so much sense. And I guess that, you know, you guys being quite prescriptive, these are the things that you guys would recommend to ensure that people are having the right controls in place. For example, the MFA. So maybe let's just move on then from that. And for people who may be in this boat, and like you sort of mentioned before, technology shift, perhaps over time, people are a bit more used to understanding that it's not all on AWS to solve all their problems. As I mentioned before, you guys will help them to this point, and then it's on the organizations and the companies to do the rest. But what should people be doing? So maybe there's someone listening to this that's like, oh, okay, Phil makes really great points. Maybe I'm keen to hear from you, like, can you outline some critical steps that businesses can take once they're sort of set up to ensure that they are secure? Now, you mentioned those things before about your CISO and the blog and all of that, but is there anything that you can sort of just lead with today that people can start to think about or implement if they haven't done it already?
One of the most important things that people can do to help us in case they have a security issue is they can keep their contact details up to date. That sounds really simple, but it's important when you open an AWS account that you're using names, phone numbers, and addresses that are up to date. And especially that you're filling in something called the contact, the security contact details as well. That allows us, if we notice an issue, to get in touch with our customers really quickly. And that's something that's really obvious maybe when you first open the account, but maybe after it's been open for 5 years in a large organization, maybe those people have changed roles, not the right phone number, different email address, et cetera. So one of those top 10 tips from our CISOs is as simple as keep your account information up to date. I'd say the next layer is the technical recommendations. I mentioned MFA on root before. There's other things you can do around using strong identity, other forms of strong identity. And MFA itself is a form of strong identity because identity is a very important control in a cloud environment. Your username, your password, your MFA token, your access key in a technical sense, identify who you are to the cloud environment. So it's very important that you remain in control of those credentials. And then the third I would offer, which is less about technology, is about organizational culture. So we work a lot with customers to help them understand that we think regardless of the cloud platform that they use, they should really have a big focus on security. And we're finding this to be more and more true, especially in Australia. The Australian government is also quite focused on making sure that small businesses and large businesses understand that they have security requirements and help them meet those security requirements. And the major providers, including AWS, are doing the same. So we encourage all of our customers to think about security, to build organizational practices that help them adopt secure practices, and to make sure that security is not just seen as something, oh, well, that's the cloud provider's responsibility, or, oh, that's the security team's responsibility. You know, security is very much everybody's responsibility in an organization.
Yes, most definitely. So, okay, I want to just go back one step. Responsibility, you raised before. So just so people are clear, what is the responsibility for AWS? And then if you're a customer, where is then there's the line on you're the customer, this is then your responsibility? Just so people are very, very clear.
So AWS as a provider is responsible for what we call security of the cloud. Okay, so that is physical security. It's all the AWS staff security. And it's the security of the bits of compute that make up the services themselves. It's everything that a customer sees when they first access a service is AWS's responsibility. The first boundary comes when a customer chooses a service and chooses a security configuration for the service. We call this security in the cloud, and this is a customer's responsibility. For example, we have over 220 different services. Choosing those services is a customer's responsibility. We don't make that choice for them. We give them an open cloud platform. They choose what services they want. And then, like I said before, there's no one security configuration that would cater for the millions of active customers that we have on the AWS platform. So we give customers choice around the type of security configurations they want to use. Every time a customer makes a security configuration, they make a security choice, and that choice is their responsibility. I said before, choosing to use a password or encryption or an advanced detection service, those are customers' responsibilities. And 10 years ago, when we were talking about this, we used to end there, but we're very clear nowadays to talk about the third layer, which is the help that customers have to make good choices. And that's by asking us again, hi, I'm a customer. Can you tell me what security configuration I should apply? And we'll say, yeah, what kind of customer are you? Are you big? Are you small? Are you high tech? Are you not? And me, my team all around the region, around the world will give customers good advice on choosing the best security configurations. Our professional services team will help them build with the best security configurations. Our premium support team will help customers understand what these security configuration choices are. And then our huge partner network around the world will also help customers either apply the best security technologies or make good security configuration choices. So again, AWS is responsible for security of the cloud, for getting the service to the customer. Customers are responsible for security in the cloud, which is when they choose a service and choose to apply a security configuration. And AWS and our partners help customers make these good decisions.
That is excellent. And I love the demarcation there. And I guess the analogy that was coming to my mind as you were speaking is I live in an apartment building. So for example, the main entrance, the building looks after, the garage at the back, they look after. So of course, if there is an issue, it would be on them. Of course, when I come up to my own apartment, it's technically my responsibility. So if I leave my door open, for example, then that's really on me and not the building. So would you say that that was just what I was thinking about as you were speaking? Was that sort of the same analogy that you would draw towards the responsibility for AWS and the responsibility then for a customer?
That's a great analogy. None of these are perfect analogies, but that's a very good general analogy. A car is another good analogy. You get a car in a current state from the manufacturer. They've kept it very secure, but the choices you make around locking that car or the choices you make when you drive that car really have a big impact on your overall security.
100%. And they're just easy things for people to relate to. So yes, absolutely. Neil, okay. So I'm then curious from your point of view, Phil, where would you say the biggest sort of blind spots are for people that you're sort of speaking to, or more generally? Because I mean, that's why it was very important for me to do this interview with you, because I'm hearing a lot of this sort of stuff on the ground. So I wanted to just sort of demystify some of the assumptions and questions that people had. But you obviously work for AWS. I'm then keen to maybe see maybe where the blind spots are from your point of view.
Yeah, I think historically, two of the biggest blind spots around security and one of the unique benefits that we see in the cloud is around two areas, and I'll just touch on them each briefly. It's visibility and it's automation. So security is all about visibility. You can't protect yourself from threats that you don't understand or see, and you can't respond appropriately unless you're able to detect. So opaqueness is really bad for security. You want transparency. One of the benefits of cloud, and sometimes we have to help educate customers so they really understand the deep benefit that's there, is that everything's an API call. And those API calls they're logged, they're recorded. There's different platforms and services that we have that show customers that full history of all of the API activity in their environment. So for example, in a previous data center, the customer might not know who installed a server, who removed a server, who disconnected a network cable, who entered a facility, who logged on someplace. And in the cloud in AWS, all that information is available through, for example, CloudTrail, one of our most common logging platforms. And then we build a lot of security solutions based off of that visibility. So for example, GuardDuty, which is our advanced threat detection and alerting service, ingests those logs that were just there in the cloud anyway, and analyzes them for suspicious or malicious activity and generates alerts quite quickly to send to a customer to alert them of this thing that happened. So one of those historic things that had been quite difficult was visibility. And one of those unique benefits that we like to really see customers enjoy in the cloud is visibility. And the second is automation. Automation is very important in security because there's still not enough security humans to be doing all of the security tasks every day, which I think is a pretty common topic. So cloud platforms in AWS in particular, because they're API centric in their nature, are very easy to be able to automate. And we're at the point now where we can, and we have customers doing this today, automatically build environments that automatically have the best security controls applied to them, that automatically have a lot of advanced detections applied, that automatically respond when they notice something bad has happened and automatically remediate that situation. The ability for those different services to interact with each other and to be automated to get a good security outcome is another distinct benefit.
Wow. Yes, you're absolutely right. You can't protect what you can't see. And visibility is something that's coming up a lot in my interviews at the moment for people to say, well, we try our best, but we don't necessarily get everything. So I definitely think that's a great point. And it's not always an easy one. Like, it seems easy, but I mean, look, there was a gentleman I was interviewing, a CTO of a large company, and he was saying that they're working with a customer. And the only way that they could detect where people were spinning up random environments was through the credit card statement to see, hey, there were these charges to X company. So I think that I do genuinely understand that that's not always an easy one to address. So you mentioned before the people. Do you want to sort of touch on that a little bit more?
My job to a degree is to talk to all of the CISOs at all of the customers that we have in Australia and in the rest of the region and occasionally around the world. I can't talk to them all. We have millions of active customers, but the big organizations that use us in Australia, you know, we try to really understand what their security requirements are and really give them the best advice we can especially to their CISOs or their security executives. Almost all of those conversations are about people and process rather than technology. So what it comes down to in a lot of ways is, I'd say two things, and I don't want to go too deep in either of them now necessarily. The first is they have to know how to reorganize themselves to take advantage of these inherently more agile technologies so that they can help their businesses move faster and stay secure. So that's very much around, what does my security org look like? What responsibilities do developers have? How do I improve my visibility so I can make sure they're doing the right things, et cetera? And that's very much a people and process conversation. The second half to the conversation, which I think is more accessible for everybody, is skills and training. We're not yet at a point where the entire security industry understands all of the details of cloud technologies. Maybe 5 years from now, we will be. Maybe 10 years from now, we will be, but we're not there yet. We're much better than we were 5 or 10 years ago. I was at the OSCIR conference a couple of weeks ago, and you know, there's a very good understanding of cloud security, but it's not yet well known by everybody in the industry. So we spend a lot of time making sure that we're training people. As an organization, we've trained more than 300,000 people across Australia with cloud skills since 2017. And globally, our goal is to train more than 29 million people around the world. We work with customers all the time in Australia, like NAB or Telstra or Kmart, who have really embraced this and created their own AWS cloud training guilds. We have free online cloud security training that's available, and we've got security courses and security certifications for advanced industry professionals. And then some of the things that I really like to see is we've partnered with the big Australian banks and the cybersecurity center to help fund training programs that touch, you know, the secondary school programs in Australia. So partnering with organizations like Grok Academy to be funding the cyber school security challenges or the cyber live competition that happens annually to make sure that high school kids get the exposure that they need to cloud security. And then we also work quite closely with universities like the University of New South Wales's SecEDU program or RMIT University's Cyber Ready Cloud Innovation Center in order to make sure that university students, computer science students, understand cloud and cloud security as well. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to build a pipeline of talent from the secondary schools into the universities through external professional training programs to make sure that the industry's got the skills that they need to be really good at cloud security, because we think that's important now and that's going to become even more important in the future.
So you mentioned before, Phil, it's not as not well known. AWS is not like new-ish, but I kind of understand the concept of people saying it's new-ish. So do you think it's more that and people need to be obviously trained? Because, I mean, it's complex, right? I mean, I know many people that have done the AWS trainings and all that, and they said, you know, it's quite complex. Like you can't, you know, you need to be across it quite inherently to understand it at that level. It's not something you can just pick up super easy if you're not familiar with. So is it more so that in terms of cloud sort of being still new concept to some people? And I know it doesn't feel like that, and it doesn't feel like that maybe for me or for you because we're in this space all the time, but for other organizations that historically have been a little bit more traditional, do you think that's where we're moving to now? And then over time, there will be the adoption there? I mean, like in 5 years' time, it's going to be very, very different when you and I have this conversation again, for example.
Yeah, I'd say it's two things. Number one, if you look at our letter to the shareholders from our CEO, last one came out in about the last month, cloud technology is still only a small single-digit percent of the overall technology landscape of the world. So as much as it's very visible right now and as much as it's changing a lot of things, there's a lot of non-cloud technology out there still. And a lot of security people are focused on that non-cloud technology landscape. So there is an element of it where not everyone has had the exposure yet, which is why we try to make it so easy to get that exposure. The second thing I would say is that the cloud security is, we like to say it's the same as traditional security, it's just a little different, which means you can get all the security outcomes you're looking for. You can apply protective controls, you can apply detective controls, you can protect data, you can protect identities, et cetera. It's just the tooling and the interactions are a little different. And the primary reason the tooling and the interactions are different is, again, it's because they're all APIs. So what I do a lot of times and what the team does a lot of times is help educate customer executives, customer leaders, customer staff, incident response teams, people in the SOCs around APIs and how to think about APIs from a security perspective and how to know what good or bad looks like as far as API security goes. So number one, you know, cloud is still just a small single digit percentage of the overall technology landscape. And number two, cloud is an API. And those two things together means not everyone is expert at it yet.
Would you envision in the next few years that single digit will go up in percentage? And then if so, do you have sort of a number in your mind? And I get like not everyone can obviously, you know, adopt to cloud. I understand that, but single digit is definitely lower than I thought in my mind. So would you envision that number will go up significantly now with just how the market's moving and then more people getting the adoption towards like cloud or what do you sort of think?
I don't have a specific number, but our vision's always been clear that we see in the future, the majority of IT workloads will be running from the public cloud. So we're at the start of that transformation period. But think about what it was like in, I don't know, 1984 or 1985 after personal computers had been around for a little bit, but not a long time. Think about what it was like in, I don't know, 2002 or something, when sure there were mobile handsets and the first smartphones, but they hadn't yet been in everybody's pockets. You know, our vision has always been that cloud computing will be the primary way that digital workloads are delivered in the future.
Yeah, sure. I remember like as a kid and the whole family would go on the internet as a family and that just would never be a thing today. Like it'd be one computer and you'd all huddle around it. Like it's just not a thing that we see today. So I think that's a great way of your observation towards the adoption towards cloud. Now, I just want to focus on a couple more things before we close today, Phil, would be, you mentioned before about the training. Now, I know just from people in my network that have done, you know, the AWS training, for example, and there's a lot of new products and things to be across all the time that you guys are bringing out. So what would be the best way for people to navigate all of this?
Sure. There's a few different places. Throwing AWS security training into your web browser of choice will bring up some great links straight away. There's our Skill Builders platform, where there's over 500 different courses available for people to take, including security. And then there's AWS training and certification, where we have very formal learning paths for cloud security. For example, it starts with our basic cloud security fundamentals class, which is a few hours free and online, and can progress as far up as our formal AWS cloud security specialty certificate, which is the one that people told you they were studying for, which absolutely, it definitely is rigorous. That's the capstone. But that free cloud security fundamentals course or any of the cloud security courses on Skill Builders is a great way to get started.
In terms of any sort of final thoughts or any sort of closing comments, Phil, is there anything specifically specific that you'd like to leave our audience with today?
It's been really exciting in Australia and New Zealand and in Asia Pacific and around the world, like working with a lot of the big customers that have been so forward thinking and visible with their migrations into the cloud and with AWS. We had a chance at Summit to see some of those up on stage. I mentioned Westpac and the Cybersecurity Center before. It was great to see Macquarie Group or National Australia Bank or Commonwealth Bank also up on stage at different times, talking about their own journeys into the cloud and cloud security. It's great to work with organizations like Telstra or NIB or Aussie Post or all these big name brand Australian institutions that have really embraced cloud in a really fundamental way. And I've been really proud, and AWS as an organization has been really proud to like work with these customers and help them. I think one thing that I find not all the Australian technology industry understands so well is how forward thinking and leaning Australia as a country has been into public cloud. A lot of the first, most interesting, highly critical, highly regulated workloads in the world either came from Australia or Australia was there very early days. So, and it continues to play an important role when big workloads like census or everything else runs in public cloud. So good job, Australia. All those Aussie businesses have been really playing a leadership role, and it's been great to have similar conversations with other customers around the region as well. So it's great to work with those customers. That kind of excites everybody at Amazon and excites me personally. And I'm really interested to see where it goes in the next couple of years.
Well, let's see if those numbers will be single digits, will sort of boost up in the next few years. But you'll have to come back and do another interview to tell me how those numbers are going, because that actually shocked me a little bit. So maybe maybe I don't have my finger on the pulse in this space as much. So Phil, absolutely enjoyed having you on the show. It was really important for me to bring you on here because there's a lot of things that people were saying out in the market, even to me, and I wanted you to demystify a lot of the questions that people had. So thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your insights today.
Thanks, Chris. I very much enjoyed it.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found today's episode useful and you took away a few key points. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get our latest episodes.
This podcast is brought to you by MERCSEC, the specialists in security, search, and recruitment solutions. Visit MERCSEC.com to connect today.
If you'd like to find out how KBI can help grow your cyber business, then please head over to kbi.digital.
This podcast was brought to you by KBI.media, the voice of cyber.